The last thing I remember is probably, getting things together, approaching the base of the scramble about 5:30 a.m. And then the next thing I remember is probably about 2 weeks later, broken memories of waking up on a hostel ward.
Hello and welcome to the World Extreme Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Fionn Davis, A&E doctor and expedition medic, and your podcast host for the day. Today we are hearing a very personal story about an accident on the Isle of Skye from a fellow A&E doctor, Dr. Luke Mueller. And a quick disclaimer, Luke's partner is currently 3 days past her due date and about to give birth any day now. So if we have to break off halfway through, that's why. Welcome to the podcast, Luke.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Happy
Pleasure.
to be here.
So a little bit about Luke. He's a junior doctor based in North Wales with a background and interest in emergency medicine. He has a passion for mountain medicine and anything that maximizes his time outdoors. He's currently studying the diploma in mountain medicine, hoping that this prepares him for future opportunities for expedition and mountain medicine work. In August 2020, Luke was very fortunate to survive a traumatic mountaineering accident on the Isle of Skye. This led to a challenging 9-hour rescue by the Skye Mountain Rescue Team and a subsequent 7-week hospital stay, which included 10 days on ICU. Since surviving this and being left with his associated traumatic injuries, he gives his unique insights into his rehab process, both physically and mentally, thus far, and his journey to getting back into working as a doctor whilst keeping up with his outdoor passions. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I appreciate that this might be a little bit tricky to talk about, but really appreciate you speaking about it
Yeah,
today.
no worries, no worries. Yeah, I've been asked about it on many occasions, but I never try never go that much into detail because it's often like in work, and I don't really want to open a massive can of worms to, it's a big thing, a big story to explain and go through.
Yeah.
This is probably the biggest platform I've gone through in depth, so
Oh, well, we really
it's
appreciate it. Yeah, because we'd passingly mentioned it, I think, when we'd kind of worked with each other in ED. But yeah, it's not really the right time to go into depth about probably the like the worst accident you've ever had. So yeah, it is a long story. But okay, let's go back to the beginning then. So on the day of the accident, so it's back in 2020, isn't it? You're on holiday in the Isle of Skye, a beautiful island. I've been there. The weather was terrible, which I think is pretty normal.
Oh, well, I was lucky when I was there.
And
I mean, go
it's
for it.
pretty epic for its scrambling, climbing, Coolin Ridge kind of mountaineering up there, isn't it? So yeah, do you want to sort of talk us through what you can remember, what happened leading up to it?
I mean, just some background in terms of, like, obviously, I was just on a bit of annual leave from working in ED the full time during the first lockdown in kind of February to August 2020. So it was kind of a period of where lockdown was easing a bit, and we were free to go and travel a bit further afield. We were only I was with my ex-partner. We'd been in Sky, traveled up to Isle of Skye. We were there for about a couple of days. We did a few low-level coastal walks, and we had the Coolin Mountains in view, and I was really excited to get up high, get amongst the mountains. But unfortunately, on first few days, my ex-partner, she rolled her ankle, and she was, not feeling really up for any exposed scrambles or anything like that. But I, had plans to do a scramble called the Dew Bridge scramble, which is very close to the Cullen Ridge kind of mountain range. And I proposed a my plan was basically we parked up at a place called Elgol, where you can get a ferry from the peninsula around to near to a lake called Loch Cruach, which is at the base of the scramble I went to go and do. And I thought this was ideal because she could get the boat over, and then I basically scramble across on a really nice coastal scramble on the day one, the day before my accident, to get to this lake called Loch Cruach. We wild camped overnight there. I met my partner there that night, and then the next day, I went to go on this grade three, quite bold scramble, solo because of her injury, and I wanted to go and do it by myself. And the last thing I remember is probably, getting things together, approaching the base of the scramble about 5:30 a.m. And then the next thing I remember is probably about 2 weeks later, broken memories of waking up on a hostel ward. So
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
so my
amazing. You've lost quite a bit of time there, haven't you?
yeah yeah so my memories of an initially were basically early on, obviously being quite confused to why I was, in a hospital bed in a on a hospital ward, looking down at my legs, looking a bit worse for wear. I was from talking to my ex-partner and relatives about what had happened. My dad was really great because he managed to get the number for a member of the Sky Mountain Rescue Team, the main medic who was on the team that day, who I spoke to from an early point when I was in hospital, and really helped to orientate me to what had happened. So essentially, what happened is that a call, obviously a call was made by a nearby climber who heard some rockfall, suspicious rockfall, immediately followed by a loud thud, which sounded like a body hitting the ground. A fairly vague call to mountain rescue to begin with. Very lucky that they came out and looked for so long to find me after like 4 hours of searching. And then they found me unconscious in a steep gully, upside down, broke open fractures to my proximal tibia, and they packed me up and took me to Aberdeen, and so that was the beginning. So in terms of the mechanism of what happened to get me to that point, obviously it was I know for a fact that interestingly I managed to get my Strava uploaded for my watch a few like a month later when I got back. Well, actually it was a couple of months later when I got home. I got my watch working, and I got to the top of the Doob Slabs. I can't actually name the peak of the Cullen Mountain, but it was about 940 meters, and then it was on the descent that and it looks like my fall happened at about 700 meters on the descent. I can't tell you too much else about the actual day, because it's obviously that was just me piecing things together from photos from my phone. It looked like I was having a great day before on the ascent, but then obviously the descent didn't go to plan, and
Yeah,
yeah,
wow.
so yeah.
So, and that's pretty scary. Well, I guess it's a pretty scary call for that climber to make as well, to be like, I think I've just heard a body falling down this mountain. Come and have a look. Come and see what you can find.
I think that it's really amazing. And I again, this is a another a person that I've been in contact with on and off, and we keep trying to meet. He's actually a guy from Ambleside, and I keep meaning to try, me and my dad mean to go and meet him, but take him out for dinner at least, to say thanks for making that, call from your suspicions, because that was a, a pretty important call to make. And yeah.
The mountain rescue team kept persevering as well and kept looking at you for 4 hours before they
Yeah,
actually found you.
I think the one of the main reasons they looked for so long, over 4 hours, was they, mountain rescue teams, what, the typical mountain rescue person is, they just love being outdoors. And the day that the accident happened, it was a great day. It was a beautiful day. So they treated it like a bit like a just a training exercise, or maybe this, probably a false score, but we'll keep looking and scanning the area.
Yeah. And then so what have they told you about the rescue for them? What did they sort of
The main medic who I was in contact with early on was really good, because he told me a lot of he answered a lot of my questions. Like I was answering and asking in-depth questions about, what were my observation when he found me and things, and what, how did you manage my airway, like what did you do, how did you treat me, kind of thing. And I think it was it there were quite a few young novice members on the team that day, and I think they were quite affected by the state they'd found me in. Although I was good practice for them for their airway skills, apparently they were practicing MPs and things like that, and it was quite good in that sense. But after they were kind of affected, and the main medic on the team that day asked me to attend the AGM in, well, it was December 2020, on Zoom, to kind of talk about my accident and what I could remember, which was very little, and mainly about the rehab process. And I think just for them to see me like alive and kicking, and as opposed to how they found me on the mountain that day. And that was, they were so thankful for me doing that. But I was like, well, of course. I mean, you guys literally are the reason I'm here, so
Yeah,
of course
I
I'm gonna
think
chat.
it's not that often that they get follow through but with patients. So yeah, it's really probably means a lot to them to hear from you and again to see you in in a better state than they'd found you. So you were upside down. Did you say open fractures both legs?
Open fracture on the left proximal tibia, and just a wound on the right leg, and no other, that was my main physical injury. And then just the fact I was unconscious, from when they found me to when they dropped me off at Aberdeen Royal Infirmary.
So did they have any sort of idea how far you might have fallen at that point? Was it obvious from the terrain or?
They reckon they say about 100 meters, 100 feet, around that ballpark. That's what they, because
Wow.
that's what they, that was their prediction, from the terrain. And
Yeah.
I guess there needs to be, I guess, a considerable force for me to have a, I guess, that pretty, the open fracture, I guess. So
So just
yeah.
talk us through all of your injury list. What injuries had you sustained then?
So open fracture of my left proximal tibia, a closed patella fracture on the right, with a wound that was washed out on my right leg. And diffuse axonal injury, which I didn't actually really, didn't know much about before. I kind of, I knew I'd heard about it from like, okay, people in the RTCs, from the rapid acceleration, deacceleration forces in the, in your close skull. So that was.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I'd sort of have heard about it in medical school, probably in the context of like Formula One drivers or RTCs, that sort of stuff. But yeah, not, and especially from A&E, I don't really have much experience of managing it because we just don't kind of think about it that early on, I guess. But
And
yeah, okay, so
I was
significant.
yeah so yeah and I mean I the interesting thing is that I've got all of my trauma scans and X-rays and things on a USB stick because I went through the process of like asking everybody, like, can you send me all of my imaging and things? Is that possible? And yeah, it took a while, but they sent over on a USB stick. So it's really strange looking at those images and be like, oh, yeah,
It
this
sounds
is,
like you were such a doctor in rehab that you were like, right, I need to speak to the mountain rescue team. What were my observations? What were my airway
yeah.
interventions? What show me my scans?
It's yeah, I feel, yeah. It was yeah, interesting to kind of to be on the wrong side and the other side,
So you got flown to Aberdeen via helicopter, I think, and then spent 10 days on ICU and then
So
we're transferred back to North Wales, I think. Is that right?
no. So I was 4 weeks in Aberdeen, and then I was transferred to the Walton in
Oh, yeah.
Liverpool for the that was when my kind of main rehab started. Because for the first 4 weeks in Aberdeen, I was non-weight bearing because of my fracture. So there wasn't much rehab that happened apart from, removing tubes. And being twocked and building up my nutrition and the basics, and then when I got to the Walton, that I was so keen to get back up on my feet, and again it was quite frustrating when I got to Walton. The off-peak team hadn't clearly stated that I could weight bear, so
Oh,
physios wouldn't touch me and said, oh, we can't touch you yet, because your weight bearing status hasn't been confirmed by orthopedics. And I was like, so I kind of was very stern saying, can someone push me to the orthopedic clinic with my notes, and I get someone to document clearly that I can now weight bear. It's been 4 weeks, and then from there it was yeah, rehab
yeah,
that,
sounds
go started,
frustrating NHS bureaucracy at its best. So you're like, get me in a wheelchair, push me to orthopedic clinic, that I'll get them to document that I can weight bear at this point. So
it was crazy to be on to really empathize with how the system can just be so slow and rubbish, and communication breaks down, and it affects obviously your recovery, obviously your ongoing recovery, and so but yeah, I was well keen to start getting, moving on. Actually, I was actually given my old wheelchair to wheel around, and then went from that to two crutches and then one crutch. And so yeah, it was exciting times from a rehab point of view, because
Yeah.
for 4 weeks being in immobile was it was yeah, pretty big steps to take that I was well keen to get on with.
Yeah, I bet it's pretty exciting once you've been, immobile and completely dependent on everyone else to do things for you, to then get a little bit of independence back and start being able to do simple things for yourself, right? Like,
I mean, I got very familiar with the old Sarah Steady, in the early days. It was was so strange, but oh yeah, I've seen these drawings. Oh yeah, okay, now I'm using them. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it was
Has that changed how you treat patients now who are maybe immobile or?
yeah, it's made me like hyper aware of where that core bell is, you know, if patients are, you know, immobile and need, you know, not able to do things from, you know, it's because obviously I was relying on that for everything, so you know, just so that's, yeah, that is the main thing that I'm hyper aware of now.
And then what did your rehab process sort of involve?
So at first I was very set on the physical side of my rehab, because for me, once I was off ICU and my mind was kind of like in Aberdeen, my early memories, obviously are like about two over just over 2 weeks. It's kind of my mind wasn't all there, and I wasn't really remembering things, and some of my early memories are just actually, you know, being able to speak properly again. Like I had a period of slurred speech and word finding difficulties after I was came off ICU, and I, you know, I always put that down to, you know, the fact that I was on many drugs, I was intubated and things. But looking back, it's probably got something to do with the fact I had a traumatic brain injury as well. And yes, yeah, so the rehab process in Aberdeen was just basic.
I'm guessing they were
You
still
know.
sort of, once you were off ITU, they were still sort of evaluating the extent of your brain injury, et cetera, and then you were
Yeah.
still non-weight bearing, so physically, I guess there's not a great deal you can do from
Yeah.
that perspective,
So yeah,
so.
that was, yeah. So yeah, rehab was all, you know, starting in Walton, physical rehab, and then so you just, you know, daily physio, strengthening, conditioning things in the evening. I'd work through myself that I'd been given from the physios that day, and then a few after a couple of weeks being in Walton, I that was the first kind of assessment I got from the clinical psychologist regarding my kind of brain recovery, and at that point I was like, well, I feel fine. My, you know, my limbs are all working. I feel, you know, I'm speaking okay now. I can, you know, I don't think there's anything neurologically, you know, wrong here. I've had a big knock on the head, but you know, I think I've been very lucky. On the first cognitive based assessment, I you know, I remember so clearly that when the kind of realization when my head wasn't all recovered, because on this assessment, the first thing this the psychologist said to me, said, "Oh, can you just remember this simple statement?" And then when I ask for it at the end, just tell me what I said, and then we did all the other assessment and went through it for about 20 minutes or whatever, and then she asked me what she said at the beginning, and at the end, and I just couldn't recall at all, you know. My recall was, that was the realization that my recall is affected here, so that was quite a scary realization that my brain might be a bit worse for wear and needs some time to, you know, recover.
Yeah, and I guess with that realization, and you'd probably be thinking about this anyway with your sort of physical injuries, but at what point in your career were you at this stage, and were you sort of concerned about
Well, you
career,
know,
how it
I
was going to
was,
affect you?
yeah, I was, yeah, very, I mean, you know, I was, you know, very, I mean, I was F3, you know, and I was obviously concerned about, getting. I was so keen to get back to work. I was really getting bored of being in hospital, and I was so keen to get back, but I was very scared that maybe my insight into my injuries weren't all that, and maybe my brain wasn't working, wasn't able to. I couldn't do the job that I trained many years to do. It's now been, I've now broken my brain, so to speak. So that was a big concern that kind of I was ruminating about.
And I
Especially after
guess.
that first assessment, I was like, okay, yeah, okay, maybe I there has been some damage here.
Yeah. And you think about how many things you have to remember in short-term recall within ED as well, about how if you're juggling multiple different patients and you've got various different, jobs to be doing for them and things that, yeah, it could be really challenging. To come back from a traumatic brain injury to a pretty intense ED environment as well. But so what did your cognitive rehab in what did that entail?
Well, the I mean the there wasn't really, I mean, apart from just there wasn't really any particular cognitive rehab
No, okay.
that I had, or actually, thinking back, the one of so talking about to any urology I had, I did early on in Walton, when I was seen by the neurologist there, I did have some paresthesia early on in my left hand. No weakness, just paresthesia, which I kind of was given a squeezy ball to just kind of do exercises every day, and that it kind of went away with time. But and also one of the rehab things I did with that, knowing about the paresthesia in my left hand, was I practiced my handwriting, because I'm left-handed, and even though I kind of for a few weeks I kept kind of a journal of my time in Walton. And looking, when I look back at the handwriting in that journal, my God, the handwriting is so. I mean, my handwriting anyway, in a good day, is terrible. But this
Yeah, living
handwriting
up
was
to
just,
doctor handwriting stereotypes. Good.
I mean, even now I struggle to read it now. I'm like, what was I trying to write here?
Really? Wow.
So. Yeah, come to rehab. No, just well,
So it's just kind of
I
give it time and let it
I think
heal.
so.
Let it.
And my main cognitive rehab I gave myself was mainly on discharge. Was prepping for the FAQ primary, just to keep my mind busy. That was because, oh, I've got loads of time here. Might as well get this exam done. So that was great. Did that pass that? So yeah.
Yeah, that's probably quite good for, the neuroplasticity and remodeling and all that is, give it a little challenge and what I guess so from your experience as a patient in hospital for quite a long time, what was your perspective as a doctor and being a patient, and how has this sort of changed your practice as a doctor?
Well, I think early on for me, the difficulty, I think, was the fact, with it being COVID lockdown things, and the visiting for was not allowed at all for on ICU during that time. Literally, I think my mum and my brother visited for like 10 minutes one day, and then after that, I was just phone calls about updates, daily updates. I think, and that was very difficult for my family. And I think when I recently hadn't my previous job in ICU, it made me realize how important keeping family in the loop, doing her best to kind of keep updates with family about, you know, their relatives on, you know, in on ICU is, you know, pretty important, and you know, I think makes a big difference to the family, and yeah, because
Yeah, I guess sometimes
it's tough.
you've got a massive list of things to do, haven't you? And then sometimes calling the family just kind of slips off the end of the list, because you're sort of focused on the person in front of you and doing all the jobs you can for them. So sometimes, yeah, picking up the phone call or speaking to the family on the other end of the phone doesn't always seem like a priority. But yeah, for your family, especially because you're in Aberdeen, right? So, and your family don't live up there, so they were all.
So I mean, yeah, because it's during during the kind of that period of time, it was just the very restricted to one person visiting. You know, after I stepped down, it was one person for 1 hour a day. So yeah, it was, and you know, my mum obviously from the northwest, England. So yeah, was having to sort out accommodation in Aberdeen for like a month, you know. So yeah, yeah.
And then you mentioned about the importance of having that call bell close, which is something that I think no doctor ever thinks about, me included.
Yeah.
But it's really important, isn't it? And are there any other little sort of patient-orientated things that I guess you've learned from the experience?
I think the you know, early on, you know, pain was quite a factor for me. I mean, so I think I'm more, you know, very aware of managing pain, you know, for patients. Yes, I mean, and the effect of, you know, just leaving people in pain, you know, it just, I think it's, yeah, I think that's, I'm very more, much more aware of that, I guess.
Once you've had the experience yourself, then yeah. I had a really pathetic accident playing rugby, but I broke my clavicle, and I remember sitting in the A&E waiting room, and I'd asked for cocodamol, like, it was probably 2 hours ago, and I was just in so much pain, and all I could think about was how much my shoulder hurt. And it was really draining, and you feel like you've been forgotten, and you're like, why don't they understand how much pain I'm in? I just need my painkillers right now. Yeah, but I'm much more liberal with the painkillers now in A&E,
Yeah,
definitely.
I think we're all, yeah, often to a bit conservative sometimes. Just like, I just give, yeah, just treat pain, just
Yeah, it can only be
yeah.
good. Yeah.
But yeah, and just little things like, obviously, when things are delayed in terms of like getting plans in place from, you know, communication breakdown with different teams about patients, I just think it's good to just get things done early so people can get up on it. Because that was the thing that I was really frustrated about, was affecting my journey, you know, through rehab. Was, you know, it could have been delayed a lot more if I hadn't really been like, come on, get this documentation so the physios can get on with me and work with me. So I think, you know, basics like that and just getting that sorted out is very important to
Yeah, the communications
progress
and
people
handovers
through.
between teams. So what were your major learning points from the experience? I guess from all the way up from your accident to your rehab to now, what were your major learning from it?
I think early on, you know, patience, learning to have patience is pretty key early on. You know, with the injuries that, you know, I sustained, I mean, you know, it took time to get on my feet and get going again back to where I was before. And you know, I'd never really had any significant injuries before, where it took time to recover. You know, apart from maybe sprained ankles, but you know, in a few days, you know, you're back doing what you know, do what you want to do. You know, so that was difficult early on, because I, you know, I remember so early on that with the physios, I was I gave them a tag when I got to Walton. I said, you know, I want to be off crutches by the time I'm discharged. And they were like, man, this might, it's quite a challenge, you know, because you come to us non-weight bearing for 4 weeks. And now you, so anyway, I was discharged on one crutch, and was like, okay. And then after a couple of weeks at home, and you know, I kind of weaned off that crutch. Yeah, so that was a big learning point. And then
Yeah.
I think later on down the line, with especially with my physical injury, I kind of had a milestone in my head with the I was being reviewed by Orthopaedics and Broad Green, and I had a milestone 12 months post-accident that my left leg, which is the one that gives me the most trouble, would be back to normal, back to pre-accident Luke. And I was just like, yeah. But when it got to, you know, 12 more months and onwards, and you know, it was still a bit niggly, and I was just like, I feel like this is probably not gonna go away completely. Something that I just need to manage and adapt to and strengthen, and you know, and to just reduce any discomfort that it might I might get when I'm out in the mountains. So it's yeah, so it just learning to accept and adapt to kind of those injuries, and that's quite what I've kind of learned really. Yeah, and I think the overriding massive learning point is how friggin' lucky and fortunate I've been, and I'm so grateful how lucky, yeah, I have been at every level of my journey, you know, right from day one of the accident. The fact that, you know, a call was made when I was, you know, doing this solo scramble. MRT found me, and then obviously the outcomes of my injuries have, you know, if you know, I mean, I've got back into what I was doing before. Obviously, it could have been a very much poorer outcome after, you know, especially of my the fusaxial injury I sustained. And then having, you know, just how lucky I was to have a great support network, you know, family and friends around me. And then how, and again, how lucky I was to be in a great job in Ysbyty Gwynedd in North Wales, with a great work family, where you know I had a you know really supportive phase return to work. So once I was stamped and signed off, like, okay, you're good to go back. You know, it was a nice phased return, and in a supportive department. And you know, simple things like getting to work was quite difficult because I couldn't. I didn't get my license back for 9 months after the accident, so there's a lot of, you know, asking people for lifts and then cycling to work, and you know, getting around those, you know, little things.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the driving license aspect of things, but yeah, it's your left leg, isn't it? So it's
Well, no,
yeah.
it was it wasn't to do, it was to do the fact that it was the standard advice for after a major a traumatic head injury, traumatic brain injury, because the slight
Okay.
increase in the post-traumatic seizures, you know, it's a standard
So you had to wait
guideline,
9 months
you
to be clear well, of your.
It was 6 months, but because the deal, it could be COVID-related DVLA delays, it ended up being 9 months.
And then, of course, I know that a lot of the Bangor, Ysbyty Gwynedd department, half of them are mountaineers themselves, so I'm sure that helps when it comes to supportive colleagues.
They're all amazing, I mean, it was right from the beginning. I always remember getting a message from my education supervisor, one of the consultants from Ysbyty Gwynedd, just clarifying with me, like, "Oh, was it the is it the fuse axial injury you've had?" Because obviously, like, he's thinking, like, all he obviously the when you hear someone has that, it's like, okay, not a great outcome prognosis there. But I was like texting away, like, "Yeah, that's what I've been told that it was in keeping with my presentation and my." My scans, so it's
And I know, so we mentioned Bangor is in a very mountainous area of North Wales, and you receive a lot of mountain related trauma into Bangor. Do you find it difficult to see those patients, or has it sort of changed your approach at all to see those patients? Is it a bit too close to home, or is it kind of like, oh no, I know exactly how to deal with this?
No,
Not really.
hasn't really respected that. No. I mean, the one thing that was strange this year, or late last year, was starting on ICU, actually working. That was the main thing that I found pretty strange because. The kind of seeing people intubated and having expedition, I can't even speak now, extubation trials, and seeing them. I have strange memories of not not memories, but I have. I remember the descriptions from my relatives of times when I was in that state, and it was strange. I couldn't kind of work out whether. I could remember when I was in that state myself, or whether I was just remembering the report from my family of how I was, and it was very it was quite surreal kind of to be, working in ICU early on, like that, so
And
that
what about in terms of your approach to the outdoors, and have you got back out into the mountains since the accident?
yeah, so I was one of the reasons I was so keen to get back to work was because to also get back to living in North Wales and so yeah, accident was August 2020 and then for a phase return to work was started in January 21, so yeah, soon as I got back to Wales, I met up with local friends and colleagues and we got back out. Hiking and walking and when I had arrived back in January 2021, that winter was it was a good winter. There was a lot of snow and it was very much like going from my kind of rehab walks on flat land in Warrington with my to my mum to getting mountain boots, crampons on and going up high in North Wales was it was good. I really enjoyed getting back
Yeah,
into the
definitely.
mountains. And everyone says, are you more cautious? Obviously, the main thing that I wouldn't do now, I wouldn't go to a very, very remote place in Scotland to do a grade three scramble by myself. But I mean, that was a bold move that I made. That.
Yeah.
I think I was reflecting on this last night. I was just like, I think is a combination of the preceding 6 months of lockdown and not being able to go and do things,
Yeah.
combined with getting to it's Alaska, the place I want to go for a long time, seeing the Kulin Mountains right there, and be like, knowing about this particular route, this, you know, a really good long great scramble, hands on rock, and just like, yeah, we've traveled so far, yeah, just I want to commit to this. And yeah, but
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of I can definitely see how I could definitely be drawn into the same sort of thinking. You know, when you get sort of fixated, or you get really excited about a route that you're going to do and you've been planning it out, and especially with lockdown, you've been locked down for months and you finally get back out and see the mountains, and yeah, I can
I
definitely
had
see
so many
how that.
flight. I had quite a couple of flights cancelled too for climbing trips and things I was going to go with friends. I was like, no, but you know, this is this can we you know this is what I want to achieve. And yeah, so yeah, so in terms of so my approach, yeah, outdoors hadn't really changed too much, as apart from, you know, don't make such bold decisions like that. And you know, just in terms of solo routes in remote locations, yeah, you know, I was very keen early on to get out climbing again. And
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
yeah.
And it's kind of a coping mechanism, but it's also great rehab, isn't it, to get out there and to, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, people say how do your injuries, you know, affect you now in terms of the outdoors. I'm like, well, apart from kind of long, steep descents, a bit of anterior knee pain on the left, you know, it's not much at all. You know
Not
what I mean? Like,
massively, yeah.
yeah, I mean, especially with climbing, I mean. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't have any restrictions or over pain. So yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
perfect. It's
very
a testament to the
fortunate.
rehab process you've been through, isn't it?
I'm just being very fortunate.
Yeah, like you said, there's so many things that lined up for you in terms of your rescue and recovery. You were very fortunate, I think. And you mentioned to me that you mentioned to me prior to the podcast that you'd kind of been in contact with your ex-partner, who we've kind of forgotten about in the story a little bit, but she must have been absolutely going out of her mind worried about you when you didn't come back. And how has that sort of affected her?
So yeah, obviously, early on, I was so caught up in, obviously it's all about my recovery and like obviously what happened to me. And I never really considered that much what my ex went through. And I talked to her, caught up on the phone with her a few weeks ago. You know, crazy how it's like quite a long time after the kind of accident. But anyway, I caught up. And you know, for her, obviously the plan she got the she the plan was for me to meet back at the port near Loch Cruach, and then get the ferry back to Elgol, the last ferry. And obviously when I didn't arrive, plan B was to just go and get the last ferry, and then I'll just obviously come back along the coastal route. But anyway, she got back to the van that was parked up at Elgol, started cooking up some food, and you know, been like, yeah, he'll be back anytime soon. Obviously, when it started getting dark, it was very much like, okay, this is a bit concerning. And yeah, I think you know, she, you know, I heard a lot about how she, you know, she had to try and phone the local police service to kind of work out if there were reports of any accidents on the mountain. And she kind of saw in the distance helicopters around the Cullen Range of mountains. It's like, Obviously, that's obviously adding to her, like, okay, Luke's not back, getting dark, helicopters. So yeah, she might, in terms of making contact, she couldn't get signal on the phone. She went to a local person's house and knocked on, and she made a phone call to the local police. And, she basically heard through the local police service that I wasn't really identified at that point, but properly. Because I remember she said the police officer said something about, oh, does your partner have red hair? And she was like, no, he's got dark hair, brown hair. She's like, oh, and then the police were like, oh, sorry, yeah, sorry, no, he's, I think that was his blood. He's not, it's like, so that wasn't a great way of putting across the injuries. Yeah, anyway, she had a tough time getting the news herself from the police services, and then it was her job to break the news to my family,
Oh,
which I think
yeah.
was pretty difficult. And she's from Glasgow, and she doesn't drive, so again she couldn't drive my van back home. She had a long journey back to Glasgow by public transport. By the time she got back to Glasgow, my family had all arrived, traveled up from Warrington, and were like, what's going on, kind of thing. So yeah, she had a tough time early on, and obviously I didn't see her for months after, because the one person who was my visitor in hospital was my mum. Yeah, she's had in terms of she's this she described kind of PTSD type symptoms to me, that she's had, and she had some kind of input counselling wise for that, and I had no idea that was the case for her for up until recently, until I told her.
Yeah, she
So
must
yeah,
have been so
long-winded,
concerned.
sorry Fionn, but yeah.
No. yeah, the
Keep
way you
rambling
described
on,
that,
just
with her sort of waiting at camp and it's getting dark and there's helicopters circling and your mind just must go to all sorts of terrible places and then actually to find out that, yeah, something awful has happened. Yeah, oh God.
yeah. She's so weird. She's actually got she took a video of the kind of mountain rescue helicopters is circling around the Cullen Mountains. Like, what? She kind of sent a video like, oh, I wonder if that's Luke. I was
Yeah,
like,
like a funny, like, oh yeah, like, oh, is Luke up there? Oh no, it actually is Luke up there.
So yeah.
What about subsequently with your I know you talked to a few people about sort of sharing your experiences of what happened, but in terms of raising awareness of traumatic brain injuries, what's been your sort of involvement with that?
Well, so far, it's been initially it's not been great, because I'm not good at talking, I'm not good at I'm quite shy when it comes to public speaking or anything like that. And everything happens to me by chance, really. Like, so late last year, I had a random message on Facebook from someone I wasn't friends with, who's she, and she was a local she's a local person, a physio in North Wales, who 6 months ago had a traumatic brain injury from a car RTC driving to a spitted gland fluid to work. And she said that she read a blog about my accident, written by my colleague Helen Locke. And she said, oh, I when I read that you live in North Wales, I wanted to meet up with you and chat about experiences. And that was really interesting to kind of, meet her and share our experiences of traumatic brain injury and different experiences and different, it's so interesting how we had very different mechanisms how we sustained the injury, and how, and we've got different kind of effects post injury. And from talking to her, it was really interesting to, it made me realize little things that I'd hadn't realized before, what for me in terms of effects of the injury on me after. So in terms of, I have had main effect is speaking disturbance, and I've realized that I have since my injury, I can't really, I haven't remembered any dreams. And okay, this interesting little, minor effect, but okay, that's something that I didn't even consider before. Yeah, I haven't remembered any dreams since my injury. Anyway,
Does that mean you're not getting your REM sleep, or
I'd
what's
yeah,
going
I'd,
on?
I need yeah, it's probably some yeah, it's just maybe probably something like that. But anyway, in terms of she was my gateway in terms of, because she's much better at spreading awareness already early on in her journey. I'm much later than her, and she's also a keen climber in North Wales. And she the charity Headway, she was raising awareness, and did a fundraiser in a local climbing wall, and she was planning to do, she did a talk, and she asked me whether I wanted to come and share my story. And at first I was like, no, I no, I'm not about that. I'm not, I can't, don't fancy that. And then my partner was like, come on, Lou, go and tell a story. And I was like, okay. So anyway, that was really, good to go and do, because I think it was so vital early on that my mum was present and able to visit every day for an hour. And I think the Headway charity really helped her in terms of providing information, and simple things like a bursary so she could afford local accommodation for like a month in Aberdeen. And I think having that early contact for me, as my only visitor early on, was really important. So it was good to kind of raise awareness of that, really.
Yeah, and I do totally get your perspective in terms of no, I don't want to talk about it all the time. Do you know what I mean? You must get tired of
I very much just, I've been so focused on just getting on with getting back to work, getting on with life, getting on with other things, not really looking back too much. But I think it is good to look back and reflect, and obviously raise awareness of these important things that helped me for an early stage,
I bet there's a whole community of climbers in North Wales who've sustained various different injuries, and there's probably a whole subset of climbers who've sustained traumatic brain injuries as well. Or maybe not, I don't know, but maybe this will mean that some will get in touch with you because they'll be like,
I
oh.
You need to tap into it, mate. Need to be more proactive,
So looking towards we've done a little bit of reflecting, we've looked back at what happened and sort of your learnings from it and the rehab process you've been through, and then looking forwards, I think you said when we were preparing for the podcast that life had taken a bit of a turn, obviously. So what sort of changed about your future goals since then?
So yeah, when I'd when we've been this had been in the making for quite a while, hasn't it? I think you talked to me back in March initially. Around that time, applications were ongoing. I applied to ACCS, EM, GP, and core on aesthetics, and the main priority for me at that point was like, I just, my priority was I want to do ED in North Wales, and it was getting a bit late in the day for kind of offers, and I had a GP offer locally held for GP training, and I was kind of like,
maybe I could learn to enjoy GP. I mean, it's not my top, choice preference career, but I could learn to kind of enjoy it. It means I get to live in North Wales and stay where I want to stay. But then, like a week after I initially talked to you, I got, got an offer for North Wales, ACCS, so I was very, very happy. Yeah, I guess not much is, things are back on track, I guess. Things haven't changed apart from, I guess, well, my partner being heavily pregnant and well timed for, starting training and also, becoming a dad at the same time.
Yeah,
I guess I've got that challenge of ba
if you didn't have enough
balance those
challenges in
things.
life, yeah. That's going to be
Yeah,
tricky, isn't
so
it?
that's I think that's going to be my main challenge going forward is balancing work and family life and developing myself in the way I want to develop in terms of doing the diploma in maths and medicine, exploring that side of work. I've
Yeah.
got
And
a lot
do
of
you think
stuff that gets
anything,
stuck in.
do you think anything's changed in terms of your priorities in life since the accident, or? It's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, right. No, I, you know, I'm. No, I, I'm. I'm. No, I'm very lucky as my pro. My priorities before was, I wanted to do ED. I'm interested in mountaineering, interest in expedition medicine, and all of that is not really changed really. It's just I've got other things that kind of I need to manage now, obviously.
Yeah.
I like with I've timed timed it well into interestingly in terms of the just
Yeah, you've got other things on your plate now, as well as what you kind of already had on your plate. So it's not that things have changed, it's just you've got more to manage, I guess, haven't you?
Thank you for that good summary. Sorry, I'm getting to the point I'm not getting my words out. I always like to use that excuse like, oh, come on, I've got a traumatic brain. I had one traumatic brain injury. Come on, just give me a break.
Don't worry about it. It's also, it's still fair. I'm post nights, and it's still fairly early in the morning for me. So,
Oh, but
so
when did you go off? When did you go off nights?
well, on Monday morning. So
Oh, me too, me too. Yes, so I've got that excuse as well.
got that excuse too. There you
Yeah, sort of
go.
double whammy. Yeah, so God, yeah.
Oh, I think that's pretty much everything, Luke. Thanks so much for talking to us. It's been a really interesting
No
podcast and
worries,
like
no worries. I
fascinating to
hope
hear
it
about.
didn't blab on too much. No, it's just
No,
yeah.
really interesting to fascinating to hear about, honestly. And yeah, good luck, and I'm so pleased that you're staying in ED because we need all the best doctors, and it's such a shame to see people go to GP. So yeah, it's really good to hear that you got your top choice job in North Wales, so
Very
best of luck
happy,
with that.
very
And
happy.
yeah, best of luck with your new family as well. And hope
Thank
that
you,
that
thank
yeah,
you.
any day now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, hopefully this week. It means that I don't have to do another on-call with Gen Surge, and then I can
That'd be
start my
good.
j job in Wrexham in for
Yeah. See
ACCS. So,
what Della
but
can do about that.
exactly. But no pressure. He'll arrive when he'll arrive,
Oh. Thank you very much to Luke. We really appreciate hearing about your story and your recovery process. And there's lots more extreme medicine content online. Go on the WEM Academy or listen to past and future podcasts for more extreme medicine content. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Please feel free to rate, review and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to. Please also head over to the World Extreme Medicine website where you can find more engaging content on extreme medicine webinars and indeed the collection of courses from our global network, including humanitarian, disaster relief, expedition, space, military, tactical and performance medicine. Thanks again.